Each day, all over the world, thousands of healthcare learners experience the power of simulation. This is the BS Podcast.
Wait, what?
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 Beyond Simulation, exploring the stories of the people behind these masterfully implemented simulations.
Each episode discovers the real stories of how these connoisseurs got into simulation and why they stayed. This is the Behind the Music Podcast of the world of simulation.
Hi, everybody. My name is Christine Park, and I'm the director of the Simulation and Integrative Learning Institute at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. And one thing about me that is not simulation related is that I am embarking on learning a new instrument. I used to play the piano. It's a little difficult to carry that around. So I thought, what about guitar? What about banjo? What about the mandolin? Finally, I settled on a ukulele. I just received my ukulele in the mail, and I've learned two chords.
Love it. Hi, everybody. My name is Bob Kaiser. I am the Associate Director of SAIL, and I guess I'm going to a ukulele concert soon, I guess.
Tour date's coming soon.
I cannot wait. One thing about me that's not simulation related is that I'm taking trapeze, and I learned the release and catch in my last lesson. So so I guess if people want to come to the circus and see a little ukulele too, I mean, we'll just do a whole show for everyone. How about that?
Sounds great. All right, Bob, are you ready to talk some BS?
I am, except Christine, you know, I've never asked you this question. Are you an Elvis fan?
Oh my gosh. Maybe young Elvis. Yes.
Young Elvis. Elvis has all these different, yes, the young Elvis. Well, I'm very sad to report the Las Vegas Review said that Las Vegas chapels of love that use Elvis Presley's likeness could find themselves becoming heartbreak hotels. The licensing company that controls the name and image of the king is ordering Sin City Chapel operators to stop using Elvis in themed ceremonies. The Authentic Brands Group has sent cease and desist letters in early May to multiple chapels. So if anyone out there wants to get married by Elvis, you better do it quick, because I think the king is leaving the building.
You better do it quick, Bob.
That's a no. I'm not doing that. Anyway, but here's a tidbit. Did you know Elvis's true or original hair color? Do you know what that was?
Oh my gosh, I would have assumed that the dark brown was his original hair color.
Right? Well, according to several facts, because I researched this through many sources, because I was like, this can't be true, it actually was blonde. It was blonde, and he dyed it black for an edgier look, and he would touch it up with shoe polish. So,
I mean, it was extremely dark. It really was shoe polish dark.
Yeah.
So I believe it.
There you go.
Love it. All right. With that, I am so pleased to welcome our guest to the podcast today. Today we have with us Gail Gleva. Gail is a retired director of the Center for Simulation and Immersive Learning at Eastern Virginia Medical School.
Oh, thank you so much, Bob and Christine. I am so excited to be here. I was so honored to be contacted to be a part of the BS.
Exactly. We are excited to have you here.
So to get us started, let's start with what we're familiar with. What are three things that you are professionally known for?
I think this is always a hard question. So I was thinking being an innovator and originator, because I was happily involved so many years ago when the SP methodology started to solidify. You know, working with Dr. Howard Barrows, who was a neurologist at McMaster in Ontario. And he is what we used to call the father of the SP methodology, and now we call him the grandfather of the SP methodology. And as a neurologist, his focus was to see if he could assess his students. So it was part of an assessment at the time. And he really wanted to look at the variant being the student in the room, not the patient. He also felt it was important to assess clinical skills by watching.
So you are really part of the origin story of human-based simulation.
I was really lucky. I was just at the, you know how you're at the right time, the right place, and Howard, I owe it to Howard, he just recognized something in me. I don't know what it was, but out of all, you know, all the SPs he worked with at the time, he asked me if I would be his trainer and coordinator for the program. And we did a lot of workshops. I don't know if you know Jan Joost from the Netherlands. He came and has been a longtime friend. He came in 86 and learned how to work with simulated patients. And he went off to do incredible things with unannounced patients. And, you know, you just sort of see these people that I have two or three day contacts with at a workshop and then doing unbelievably creative things with the SP methodology. So it's always been an honor to be involved in all of that.
Okay, so since this is called BS, Beyond Simulation, we want to know a little bit more about you, Gail, the simulationist, more about your life. So before the show, I spun a random number generator for a number between 1 and 5.
Okay.
And the number I'm going to give you are the number of things we want that are not simulation related, not on your CV, just facts about you, fun facts that people may not know.
Okay.
Okay. The number you got was 4.
Okay.
So 4 things.
4 things. I'm a home renovator. And when I say home renovator, that means my husband and I take down walls to the studs. We lift all the flooring up. We literally gut a room and then we rebuild it. So I know how to hang drywall. I know how to mud drywall. I know how to tile. I know how to lay hardwood floors. My husband knows how to plumb. I learned with him how to do electricity, but I don't like it, so he does it all. So we literally have taken the house that we lived up in Hamilton, Ontario, when I was at McMaster, renovated that house. And then when we moved down here to Virginia, renovated this house. And my kids, of course, grew up in all this renovation. So now they renovate their homes, and I go up and help them tear out rooms and rebuild, hang cupboards, whatever they need to do. Paint. I'm a very good painter. And so I'm a home renovator. I only do it for us family, some friends, but I can read blueprints. So I know exactly, help design the blueprints and go from there. So that's one.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
Are Christine and I considered friends?
Sure, of course. I really.
It's on recorded. It is recorded.
Yeah, right. You know what I really like about it? You know, whereas you're working with people all the time in simulation. And so the immediate results are always, when you're putting up a piece of drywall and hiding stuff behind, it is an immediate gratification. So it really offsets working and coming home and just immediate gratification, seeing how the house starts just build up. And, you know, of course, it's a bragging point when people come and I always say, oh, I love your house. Yeah, well, we had a lot to do with it. and one of the stimulants was, of course, and this is not a negative thing about contractors, but sometimes when you call a contractor, you don't know when they're coming or how often. Or so we were like, if you ever ask anybody, I'm of an impatient person. I have a sign on my desk that says, let patience be somebody else's virtue. So home renovating really helps with just, you know, getting there and doing it. So that home renovations is one of them. I'm an avid reader. I would love to say that it's educational, but I love science fiction and fiction. I'm currently reading a series of historical time travel, because I just find it fascinating. If you were projected or taken back in time, what would you do? What would be the challenges? So I do a lot of science fiction reading. Star Trek, I saw, you know, at the beginning, that's how old I am, when the first series of Star Trek came out, I was like right there, you know, 9 at the bit to watch it. Let's see, what other things you don't? I think the CV doesn't reflect my passion for the SP methodology. I love pushing it further and further. you know, outside what people would expect. So when I went to McMaster, or when I went to EVMS, the first name of our center was the Teresa Thomas Professional Skills Teaching and Assessment Center, because Teresa Thomas Foundation funded us to start our program at Eastern Virginia Medical School. And so I get calls from people to say, you know, my kids need professional skills. And I'm going, oh yeah, we do say professional skills, teaching and assessment. And my teenagers really need professional skills. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, you know, what do teenagers, I mean, they like music, they like, you know, other, but one of the things they do like is money. So, you know, getting some money. So I thought, well, what can we do with teenagers that might help them with money and the SP methodology? So thinking about it, I thought, you know what they need is they need experience on interviewing. Because not every high school graduate is going to college. And so they're going to be going out interviewing for jobs. So I trained my SPs to be simulated interviewers. And we had schools come to us and send their grade 12, 12th graders, to us to do interviews. So one year in one summer, we did over 300 high school kids. And they came to learn how to interview. And all the way from how do you shake a hand to how do you ask questions when they say, tell us about yourselves. And we had great fun with it. Oh, and here's where my construction in my head. So, you know, when you walk in rooms, you have the diagnostic equipment and the sinks in there. So I thought, well, you know what we'll do? We'll make boxes and paint boxes to put over the diagnostic equipment. So it was our art. And, you know, we did sort of made false walls that could easily come up back and forth from the sinks. So when they walked in, it looked like an office and or an interview. And it was so much fun. The kids loved it. The simulated interviewers loved it. And everybody thought that was, and we made some income for Eastern Virginia Medical School. So, of course, they loved it. And it was a lot of fun. It was just pushing what a simulated patient can do with the skill set we've already, you know, given them as far as giving feedback and you know, asking questions. So it was a lot of fun. So I just hope that, you know, I hope my passion in looking at different ways that our SPs can work is something that I really, really like doing. What else? How many is that? Three? The fourth one is on my CV, I bet you don't know, I'm the long distance swimmer. And long distance, I mean, in the at our cottage up in Ontario, we have an island that goes out, and I have a lap pool here that I swim in, and then I would swim to the island and back, and just because it was something that I like to do. So I like swimming. I like swimming. I like water. I get creative in water. My staff used to say, I used to come and say, I have a pool thought. And they would go, oh my God, what are we going to do? But it was always fun. So I like water and swimming.
That's great. Thank you. I did not know about you being a long distance swimmer.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I really like it.
I love those things. Have you ever thought about giving a contractor some feedback when they don't show up on time? When you did not show up on time, I felt...
Yes, that's right. I felt that maybe I could do it by myself, so we didn't need you anymore. That's right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, let's... we've already gone back a little bit in time, but let's go back even further. They say that we all kind of carry our inner child with us throughout life. So take us back in time. Who is Kid Gale?
So Kid Gale is a shy person, and I'm actually a shy person. When I get into the topic of SP methodology, I'm an extrovert, but when I'm doing more social things, I think I can be kind of shy. So I was a shy girl. I was an impatient person. I mean, that has gotten me this far, because I like I'm headstrong. So I really like when I have a goal, I like to get there and I like to do it well. So that carried me through a lot of things I did as a young girl. I was always athletic. I was always on the gymnastics team and the track and volleyball and that sort of thing. So I like to do physical sports as well. And that's my first, that was my first thing going to university. I was going to be a phys ed teacher, but I decided after the first year that that wasn't for me. But, you know, those types of physical activities, I was a young physical gymnast and that sort of thing. So young that way. I like to think I was creative. I could take mud and make a whole wonderful china set that we could actually drink and eat. My grandmother wasn't so glad that we were all in the mud. We had a lot of fun making our own tea set. So I think I was a creative little girl. Yeah, that's sort of who I was as a kid.
I love the mud tea set. Is there any photo documentation of this?
No. My grandmother was just horrified that we were out there making mud. And then they lived on a farm. And then we would take it into the old barn that was sort of broken down. And we would make our little house and sets out there. So, no. This is when I was about 14 years old. And I'm the oldest of two other sisters and a brother. And we were all out there playing house. But no. You know, back then we had to carry big cameras. You don't have the nice little, you know, Apple phones that just go click, 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 click. You had to have the film and you had to have the cameras, and that wouldn't do so well in the mud. But,
of course.
Yeah.
And so much of childhood is, as I reflect on it, it's so the process is so bespoke, right? So it's so many things just kind of happen and they go by and they're gone.
Yeah. Oh.
They leave great memories.
They have great memories. Exactly. I love being on the farm.
Mm, right.
I can milk a cow if you want me to.
I didn't bring my cow today. Shoot. Next time, Gail.
Okay.
But I do want to see it. So, Gail, I'm going to go in a little different direction a little bit. So, I loved how you told us how you got into simulation and kind of your process with simulation, definitely your creative process. But what keeps you kind of tied to simulation? Like, what is it inside you that you're just like, I have to keep doing this? Because most people, you know, are like, okay, I've done that. I'm moving on to something else. But you are still so active in our industry. So what keeps you here?
I think one of the really great things about our industry is it's always developing. I mean, it's never stagnant. And I mean, I'm sure both of you, when you're thinking about a problem, you think, well, you know, can an SP fit into here? Or what can we do, you know, on with our learners? What can we challenge them with? And I think that has always been the great thing about the methodology, is always changing. People take the training techniques and they modify it for their institution and for their own background and for their own interests. So the training methods, and I think that's one of the harder things when you say what's the right way to train, it's really difficult because, you know, what we're looking at is the endpoint, is the, you know, is the SP real authentic and realistic and calibrated to what we want them to do. But getting there is so unique everywhere. So I love talking to people and how they do it differently and how we can meld together and look at that. So it's always changing. I was telling Christine, even now as a retired SP educator, I'm involved with avatars. And now I'm training avatars to be realistic enough that the interviewer, the student, is engaged in simulation. So simulation, and I've been able to see the way simulation has grown. So, you know, it was when I first started, it was McMaster and maybe a couple other places in the world. And now look at ASPE. It's just, you know, so incredibly, various people and cultures, and you know, it's just I'm always in awe of how this methodology, and if you're bored, it's shame on you, because it really is, you know, a really creative avenue. And the background, it's not like, you know, I'm not insulting bankers, but a banker has a specific background. We've got, and there is no such thing as a, you know, typical job description or typical background that SPS educators have. So going to ASPE is so much fun. It's just so varied. And you never, as you can see by me, I can talk about this forever. You're going to have to just finally, you know, turn off the mic and tell me to shut up, because this is just so engaging all the time.
I agree. Thank you. Yes.
So, if you were prevented from doing anything that you are currently or in the past did professionally, so that is anything to do with simulation, SP methodology, those kinds of things, what would you be doing for work? I'm going to guess it's not a PE teacher, since you already told us that.
Right.
What would it be? And then for the sake of this exercise, there are no financial worries.
Okay. So I think I'm an educator. It's in my DNA. My dad, I said, was a social worker, but he was also a social worker educator. I thought I would be a social worker growing up with dad. But when I got him, and when I see him and how he would be interested in educating people, not just, you know, helping them, but also educating them, I think I'm an educator at heart. So I would do something in education, but I don't think I'm a class stand up and talk to people, educate, like in front of a class. I'm not, I enjoy presenting, but I wouldn't want to do that all the time. I'm so lucky. I have my dream job. I don't sit there and go, I wish I could. I think I would want to educate people perhaps more in, because I like physical fitness, perhaps more in how does the mind and the body relate together? If you're not physically active, why not? And how to get people more physically active and healthy. My mom being an RN, she looked at health. So I think I would probably go down that mind-body relationship and how to be healthier in how you can do it, not just a standard, here's what everybody does. But let's get personal here. So perhaps that's what I would do.
I love that. Well, let's kind of go, again, in a little different direction. So one great thing about simulation is that, you know, we receive feedback, we reflect on the choices that we make, and then we make different choices, right? But in life, you know, once you've made a choice, you kind of have to keep moving forward. But what if, sci-fi person, what if we could go back in time? And there was that one choice that you made that kind of took your life in a different direction. So what's another point in time that you could have made another choice and your life would have gone in a different direction? We've heard about possibly being a PE teacher, but is there any other choices that came up?
What I may have done is followed the academic world, but I got married, had kids, and enjoy my job so much that I really, get involved in research. Because again, you know, how do people think this stuff through? So more involved in research and clinical psychology and that sort of thing, I would have done. So I did the other area. I did research on my children as they were growing up.
I think we need a little bit more clarification on that one, Gail.
Exactly. Tell us more.
What kind of research? And do they know?
Well, let me give you an example. So, I'll give you an example, not with my kids, because you tend to meld in after a while. But I know I did this with my children. The other day at my grandson's birthday party, they had a little boy, and he was standing up on a porch, and there were all these cups there, and he started flicking them down. And so I leaned over to him and I said, "So are you going to pick these up, or do you want me to get your mom to pick these up?" And he looked at me and he was like, "I think I'll get my mom. I mean, I think I'll do it myself. Don't get my mom." I said, "Okay." So those are the types of things that I would like to do with my children, and giving them options and saying, "Okay, here's, you can decide to do this, or you can decide to do that. If you do this, these are ramifications of your death." So there was a lot of those discussions with my children. And, you know, sometimes they go, "Oh, mom." And you know, that, remember when whatever was popular, all the kids would say, "Whatever." They'd say, "Whatever." I said, "Oh, great, whatever I want. thank you for giving that permission to me. And so I would, and they didn't, they couldn't do anything about it. And so I would try to do these types of, you know, how do you get your kids to think about it? Give them options because they need options, but also if they make a choice, what that means. So that's what I mean. I did a lot of sort of experiments and research on them, and some things would work and some things wouldn't. But happily, my three children are very well adjusted and still like me.
By the way, they're in the waiting room. We're going to bring them out.
And now, Kale Kids.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea, Christine.
Yeah. So
well, that's funny.
We did a lot of these things.
I love it. It's like a lifelong yes and.
Yes, that's right. Yes and. Exactly. And so they're good. They're good at expressing themselves. They're good at giving feedback. They're wonderful parents, and I'm very proud of them. But, and I don't take full credit, of course. But I think part of that is that foundational. I always talk about foundational memories and foundational experiences, and they draw on those quite frequently. I can watch and see it. It's really fun. They don't know they're doing it, but it's really fun.
I would like to contribute an observation, because for me, this is the first time I've able to have a deep dive conversation with you, Gail. So here's my question. Are you a fan of Dolly Parton?
Yes, but Dolly Parton has several faces. And so the overall answer is absolutely. I think I am a fan of Dolly Parton.
I think you are the Dolly Parton of human simulation. And let me describe what I mean.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Part of the origin story of country music, or, you know, human simulation in this case, still doing her thing, still with that same bright, positive, gentle energy, and beloved by everyone.
Oh, thank you, Christine. It's dawning on me.
You even in a way speak like she does. There's sort of a certain cadence that reminds me of Dolly Parton. So I was hoping that you would say that you hated her.
No, I actually admire her as well. So that's really cool. Thank you so
also
much.
Also confidence she has.
What yeah, a.
I agree with that.
Oh, that's so heartfelt. Thank you.
We should start doing that with all of our guests. You remind me of, I'm totally kidding. We should not do that. But it was a good one in this one. Good choice, Christine.
All right, so we've been talking about choices and the yes and. So here's a question. What, reflecting back on your life, and this could be, it doesn't have to be professional, it could just be, you know, what you decided to eat one day. But what's a choice that you encountered that felt risky at the time, and you're glad that you did it?
So moving my family down from Canada to Virginia with a whole new program, starting from scratch. I mean, it helped Howard start the McMaster one, but starting from very scratch, it felt risky at the time. And then not 9 months later, I went to China to help them develop programs in China. And when I came back, I found out that my boss was fired. And so the president of the school, and the one who brought me down, the president of the school came down and in my office, because I read it in the newspaper, you know, Dean fired. And I sat in my office very, very concerned because it was risky. I mean, I brought my whole family. My husband quit his job of 20 years in Canada and brought them down. And the president says to me, so, you know, Dean's fired. I said, yes, I read that. And he said, we fired her, not you. I said, and he says, we're happy to have you stay. We like what you're doing here. We think it's working well. Because I had never seen simulation, much less simulated patients at the time. And so I felt really at risk at that point in time, looking at this president in the eyes and him just firing my boss who brought me down. So he could have closed the program and I would have been not in Virginia any longer. So that was, to me, was risky. I left McMaster and I love McMaster, but I just felt it was a good thing. Risky, but yeah, good to do. You never want to have that experience.
I do not want to have that experience. You're right.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing it.
Yes.
Okay, Gail, so are you ready to play a game with us?
Yes, Bob, I am.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
So this is a game we play with all of our guests, and it's just basically grab bag questions. Okay. So we're going to put 60 seconds on the clock. Full disclosure, we always go over 60 seconds, but we're going to say we're going to have 60 seconds on the clock. And you're just going to answer as many questions as you can, and they can be one-word answers, but we're just going to have you say the first thing that comes to your mind, and we'll keep asking you questions until the time runs out.
Okay, that ready? Sounds cool, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start the timer, and I will start with the first question, okay? So, and the timer will start after my question. Again, going with this whole idea that you love sci-fi and time travel, if you could time travel, who would be a person that you'd want to meet? Go.
I love Scotland, so maybe Queen of Scot.
Love that. What food makes you happy?
Sushi.
Okay. And what's one thing you own that you really should throw out?
Besides most of my wardrobe? Let's see. My daughter will tell you that. Probably my Stairmaster. Yeah.
What number am I thinking of?
23.
Very close. Actually, it was 22. It was either between 19 or 22. Really
That's
good.
That's crazy. Wait.
Yeah.
Wow, she's psychotic. I mean, psychic. Never mind. Okay, so what is one habit that you are glad that you have?
I'm a very clean freak.
Great. What is the last thing that you read physically, other than email?
That would be my my sci-fi time travel book, Culloden Moore series. It's about Scotland, way back when.
Love it. And that's our time.
Ah!
So, good job.
All right. So we're coming around the corner to close. And I'd like to ask you to think about one person who has been meaningful to you in your life. And it doesn't have to be somebody that you actually knew. It could be anybody. What is something that you admire about them? What is something that you learned from them?
So the first person, I mean, I have two competing people. One would be Howard Barrows, and then the other would be my dad. And I admire Howard because of his creativity. But yet he was very, I mean, he was creative. He was a photographer. A professional photographer. I mean, he was so creative in so many areas. I loved to listen to him and how his brain worked. And he was very humble and not controlling at all. As an employee, he just let you, he'd tell you when something wouldn't be necessarily his choice, but he was so creative. So I admire him tremendously. And he was able to balance family and work. And, you know, as a neurologist, I got really involved in neurology. I like that a lot. And then my dad, his humor. So an example of my dad's humor is, you know, if people would come up and just met him first, they'd say, "So nice to meet you." And he'd say, "And how do you know that?" So he was, yeah, so he was always challenging people. And so I really like that. You know, yeah, how do you know that's nice to meet you if you haven't met me before? So his guidance that way was really, really interesting. His humor and his different perspectives. It wasn't always just, you know, your standard type of thing. So the combination of the two, I think, has made me, with my mom dashed in there, has made me sort of who I am today.
So one final question, Gail. I've so enjoyed, and I think we both have, but I won't speak to Christine, but I've really enjoyed having you on the podcast today.
Fun too.
It's been such a pleasure. So so what is one hope that you have for simulation in the future?
I think that simulation is the way to learn. Experiential learning is the way to go. So I hope it continues to have its breadth and depth in curriculum, in how we all learn. You know, us old learners, we, you know, I don't think that lecture-based is the way to go. I never have. Experiential is the way. So I hope it just keeps growing and consumes, much to the chagrin of a lot of academia, it grows more and more in the curriculum. I think that it's, you know, Howard, when we first started talking about SPs, the way I would compare it to, I say, you know, when you buy a new car, the first thing you do is thumb through the book. New car, cool, thumb through the book. But when is the first time you learn how to change the tire? And that's when you're on the side of the road, there's a flat, and you're now, but after you learn how to change that tire, you'll always remember it. So that's with SPs. Once you do, you know, once you have experiential learning, I think that's with all simulation. So I would like to see it just continue to grow. And in formative ways, I think assessments puts a certain damper to it. I think if people are always assessed with simulation, they don't appreciate the formative part of it. So learning that formative, continuing the formative growth, and realizing the assessment isn't necessarily always the way to go with simulation. That's my hope for the next 20 years, 40 years. I have had so much fun.
Dolly, I mean, Gail, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. I've had a lot of fun too. I really appreciate both of you.
This is Christine Park together with Bob Kaiser. You've been listening to BS Beyond Simulation. Please join us for a future episode.